Blog Talk Radio.
Archangels, ghosts, and Bigfoot. Oh my! It's just another night for Supernatural Girls. Real stories, real answers to life's biggest supernatural mysteries. And now for another exciting interview with paranormal experts from this world and others. Psychic medium Helene Olson and paranormal researcher Patricia Baker. Here are Supernatural Girls.
Everyone, and thank you for joining us tonight in another episode of the Supernatural Girls. I am Helene Olson. You can find me at my website, angelslighthouse.com. And today is Star Wars Day, according to my children. And I am here with my fabulous partner, Patricia Baker. Hello, Patricia.
Hello, Helene. Hello to all our listeners. Happy to be here tonight with my most favorite person in the occult world, Lon Milo Duquette. I just can't wait to talk to him tonight. This is going to be
great fun. He's so much fun. But
he's brilliant. He's brilliant. He's funny. He's a great writer. He's just everything. And, you know, his wife, Constance, is absolutely gorgeous. And
yeah,
she looks like she's a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what her secret is, but I want to know.
I want to buy that cream.
No, whatever it is, I want them.
Magic cream for Constance. Yeah,
oh,
she looks beautiful in all the pictures.
Kind of magic, yes.
It is.
Absolutely.
But, Patricia, you didn't ask me why today was Star Wars Day, according to my children.
I was going there next. Why is it Star Wars Day?
May the 4th be with you.
Oh, my gosh. I walked
right
into that one. Didn't see it coming.
Silly.
I had a terribly long day. As you know, I was sitting in a town meeting. It was just enough to make you spell nightmare over and over again. And I'm so glad to be free of it. I mean, I feel like I was let out of jail. It's just a happy moment to be sitting here on the radio with you. And
well, it's like 3D, right? Total immersion into everything that we don't want to deal with most of the time.
It's exactly right. And mm-hmm. it's just I don't know why they can't make it into the 21st century in Massachusetts, why we still have to go and sit at these antiquated meetings with these antiquated formats. Just give me something on the Internet. I'll fill it out, send it in, done, you know?
It's New England. We don't like change, Patricia.
I would like some change with this town meeting. I really would. But, hey, I noticed on your website you now have some absolutely gorgeous bracelets. And I can tell you that when I went to the town meeting today, I had your bracelets on to protect me from negative energy, and they were. It helped me survive.
It just fills your whole aura with light, Patricia.
Well, you know, it really did.
It really did.
Yeah. But your bracelets are beautiful, and I want to encourage everybody to go to angelslighthouse.com and look at the beautiful crystal bracelets, because not only are they beautiful, but Helene has charged them with all kinds of energy from the angelic realm, and each bracelet has a purpose. So I highly recommend you go there and take a look at these gorgeous, gorgeous things. And bye.
Well, thank you, Patricia. And I'm excited because it's just the beginning. I really have a lot more ideas and some more pieces coming. So it will keep changing, and I'm really excited about it. Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
On the launch of your charged bracelets. And
thank you.
They have beautiful names, too, so definitely everybody take a peek at that. It's all beautiful, and it's all helpful in these challenging times. So, yes.
Interesting about the names, you know. I didn't make that up. That was given to me by my guides and angels, so kind of fascinating.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. They're beautiful.
Yeah.
I
was just going to say paranormal news. Very exciting tonight.
Well, it is. It's kind of a little sad because it's about a deathbed testimony.
Mm.
But at the same time, this gentleman was a former CIA official, And apparently now he is suffering from kidney failure, which, as you know, it can be terminal, and I guess it is with him. And seeing him in the video, it looked that way, which is very sad. However, he's coming forth, and he gave an interview on tape about his experience with Area 51 in Nevada and how he was allowed inside Area 51 to gather intel and report back to the president, who I guess was Eisenhower at the time. And there he described seeing several alien spacecraft, including the craft that had crashed in Roswell, New Mexico. And he and his superior officer were taken to the S-4 facility southwest of Area 51, where they observed live extraterrestrials.
So, which ones? Does it say which ones?
The Grays.
Ah.
So, and as you know, we've had conversations with another friend of ours who was an operative, and he also said he had seen and experienced extraterrestrials, but his memory apparently had been in some way blocked. But, again, this gentleman, because of the situation of the physical deterioration he's experiencing, and he felt this information was extremely important and should be given out to the people before he passed. So there is a video. We'll be posting it on our website and in the newsletter for next week in case anybody would like to see it. And it's all about what happened. So, again, more and more information is coming out.
Do you think that this is leading to full disclosure?
You know, we can only hope. I mean, how long have we been talking about this, like ad nauseum? And it just seems like we make these very, very tiny little baby steps towards it, and I don't hold out a lot of hope. We're going to hear about it from the government. The only reason I think we would is if they felt they were going to be preempted and they wanted to hang on to some little piece of power in it. That's the only reason I think they'd ever come out with the truth. Just my opinion, but hey.
Well, I think that by the time they come out with the truth, everyone's going to be yawning because there's so much information about it right now. You know, it's just be like, oh, okay. You know.
Yeah, you know, you're probably right. It would be like, look, we knew this all along. It's about time you guys caught up and came clean on it. But anyway, so, yeah, it's an interesting situation. We're going to keep reporting on it every week.
Wow. Big stuff.
Big. Very big.
Really big. Yeah. Now I'm having a brain fart, as it is. There was something I wanted to tell the audience about, but I'm sure it'll come to me later.
Well, how about this? If anybody has a question for our wonderful guest tonight, Lon Milo Duquette, then please call at 646-478-0828. That's 646-478-0828. 0828 and press number 1 and you will be greeted by our lovely call screeners, Jess and Megan, and we will take your calls from there. Also in the chat room, there's a lot of people in the chat room right now, and feel free to type any questions that you would like us to ask on your behalf. We'll be happy to do that. And should we welcome our illustrious celebrated guest?
Of course.
Well, let's get him on the air.
Good evening, Lon. This is Helene. How are you? And welcome.
I'm fine. Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Oh,
perfect.
Yes. Hi, Lon.
Hi. How are you?
Good. So glad you were able to join us tonight. Oh, my goodness. Angels and demons. And, oh, my goodness, you are the man to talk to about these things.
Oh, shucks.
Well, just so our audience knows, you are a great author. 16 books to your credit, and they've all been reviewed with 5 stars. I mean, you're a great writer. You've entertained your audiences. You've not just given us all information. You've entertained us. You make us laugh. You kind of scare us a little, and it's all good. It's all good, and I highly recommend everybody go to Amazon.com and look up the long list of Lon's books. I guarantee you could buy all of them, and you wouldn't be disappointed for one second. All these books are great. So, anyway.
Well, thank you very much for that, and I just want everybody to know that if they buy the book, they're not obliged to read it. Okay, it's good enough. They just buy it, and I've made no further provisions for my family's future. So there.
Well, actually, that was what I forgot. I was trying to reach to remember a moment ago, is that we are giving away a book tonight, right,
we
Patricia?
Are, from my private collection, my private lawn collection.
Oh, okay.
Yes, The Key to Solomon's Key, another one of my, well, all of your books I love, but this is a great book, The Key to Solomon's Key. And so, yes, if you haven't already subscribed at our website, supernaturalgirls.com, please go and subscribe, and you will be entered into a chance to win the book.
Yeah, and they have to be subscribed. Once your name's on the list, you're automatically entered. So
that's right.
You can't just think it and it will happen this time. We just need your name on there, right?
We definitely do. We need to see it right there on the screen. So we're talking about one of Helene's favorite subjects tonight with you, Lon, which is angels. And then we're going to talk about her least favorite subject, which is demons. So,
well, you know, I've changed a little bit in the last few years. I mean, I stepped over fear all that time ago, and it is what it is, Patricia. What can I say?
I know. Well, you have grown a lot through the years and come to have a bit of a sense of humor with even the dark side. So that's all good.
How else can you live, right, Lon? You gotta laugh.
No, that's right. And I've met some pretty crabby angels and some pretty sweet demons. So
and can I start with the crabby angel thing first, okay?
Yeah.
A lot of people have an amazing heart to help others. They read angel cards and they do intuitive readings. And when I talk to these people, they're just so in bliss with angels, saying they're soft little teddy bears and little kitties, and they're so warm and lovely. And that is not how I see angels, Lon.
Well,
they are huge and fierce and persistent. They don't sort of stop, you know what I mean?
Well,
so who's right?
Well, everybody's right. Except that everybody's just getting a little piece of the whole story. But you know, there's only so much that we can really wrap our meat brains around, anyway. you know, sort of accept the truth of everybody's thing and make up your own mind to the extent that you can wrap your meat brain around, you know.
Well, don't you think, you know, what I've come to understand is that everybody is getting the experience they're supposed to get?
Oh, well, that I think that goes without saying.
Mm-hmm.
We're monads of consciousness. We're we're each of us are like a computer terminal to one great big network, and only the supremely enlightened can accommodate the entire network, and everybody else is stuck with what their hardware will.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting because I use that computer analogy to a lot of people because I sometimes hear people say things like, my angel, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I say, no, the angels are like the mainframe. They can connect to 1,000 people at once. They're just sending out rays of communication just like an intelligent computer, you know.
That's just how I see it. The, the spiritual forces, period. Spiritual forces, and that would include what people call, you know, gods, angels, divine forces, archangels, spirits, intelligences, right down to demons, nature spirits, sprites.
Mm-hmm.
All of, they are aspects of natural forces, and I love the title of your. The name of your show, Supernatural Girl. Okay, it's just perfect because you know I see supernatural really as two words, or at least a hyphenated word.
Oh.
It's supernatural. Okay, there's nothing extra or transcendently natural. It's all natural. It's just that what we think of as supernatural is just temporarily something we're not understanding, and we're not grasping. But it is natural. It's part of the big tapestry, and I've been so impressed lately from a very right hemisphere artistic point of view with this concept of fractals.
Yes.
We see everything in the universe, all the natural forces and the of our dimensional reality, even vibrates with a mathematical consistency that when you apply these mathematical principles to say art or graphic form, they make these beautiful sort of like lacy turtle like designs.
Mm-hmm.
And as you move the camera of your view into these beautiful designs, you see that in the little fuzzy outline of the designs, there's the exact same pattern repeated in the borders or the outline or the hairs on the skin of these giant designs. And you go in even further, and you see the same turtle-like lacy turtle-like designs formed, and this idea that for years the Hindus have said that, you know, we're an elephant standing on a giant turtle.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is that the same pattern that just the nature of our dimensional reality is responsible for these repeating patterns that when translated graphically show the same pattern repeated over and over again, smaller and smaller and smaller, and you back your camera up and they get bigger and bigger and bigger. Well, this is exactly the same metaphor that angels are, that spirits are. They are the totality of the supreme consciousness that is the whole cosmos, that is the whole universe, that is the whole ball of wax. It's the different angels and the hierarchy of archangels over angels and angels over intelligences and intelligence over spirits and all of that are in a way these repeating fractals. But they're fractals of personality rather than fractals of images. Do you follow me there?
Yes,
I do.
And so when people are plugging in to a different level of consciousness like this, they may be plugging into a giant fractal that's responsible for great, great cosmic forces. I mean, there is probably, we break everything in nature up into four forces, the strong force, the weak force, electromagnetic force, and gravity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we could look at those four forces as the classic four archangels of everybody's spiritual disciplines. You know, we're in a reality where we at least temporarily have a front of us and a back of us and a right and a left. Okay, so we may as well call front an archangel and back an archangel and right an archangel and left an archangel and everything else subdivisions of that. And part of the big major subdivision of that is we got four fundamental forces in nature. And we could look at those fundamental forces as archangels, like the archangel gravity. And gravity AL, we'll call it the archangel gravity AL. And there's angels, smaller fractals of gravity, that have more specific jobs to do in the big consciousness spectrum, or even in physics. There's the archangel of, or there's the angel of gravity that is a huge one that has something to do, is an expression, is a personification of how black holes behave. Mm-hmm. And then there's smaller gravity AL spirits that control the dropping of your pencil toward the center of the earth, you know, mm-hmm. as it rolls off your desk. There's the gravity angel of the tides. There's, you know, different little jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're looking at when we look at huge angels are massive, incredible forces that we really, really are. They're awesome. They're awesome. They're terrible. But they're not in and of themselves evil, but they can still eat you. just like a black hole can eat you, you know?
Now,
right.
In your experience, which is vast when it comes to these entities, you said you've encountered some crabby angels. So can you tell us some stories about that? How did you know they were crabby?
Well, they're crabby just because their job is so big that my particular interests are insignificant to it, to its job. You know?
So it's kind of like you knocked on the door and the angel answered and you said, "Hey, I need a little bit of help with this," and they're like, "Oh, gee." Not you,
well,
again.
right in line with that, several times over the years I've heard this this phrase of, "We are not interested in your idle chatter." And I'm like, "You're right. I'm just babbling."
There is, I'll give an example there's a branch of magic that was developed by John Dee, and he was the court magician and the court mathematician of Queen Elizabeth I. And in his he loved his job as being her spy, but he wanted to spy for her by remote viewing. So, because it was a hassle to get in a boat and go over.
Especially in those days.
Yeah, he got pretty tired of traveling like that. And so it from the point of view of a Renaissance magus, it wasn't unscientific to try to use magic to literally bug the courts of Europe to see what was going on, to gather intelligence. And in doing so, he stumbled, in a way, he stumbled on sort of a technique to access in magical terms, to access the mind, the intelligence structure of angels, and a very, very high angels in an entire hierarchy, and little keys. He learned their language and everything else. It's quite a fascinating story, but. Many years ago, while we were just literally almost, well, we were older than teenagers, but we were very young magicians, we contacted using the Enochian language and the prescribed very, very detailed instructions on how to do it. It's just all you have to do is do it, and the change in consciousness that it brings about invokes visions or evokes visions, and it's quite a process. But we went for the biggest of the angels that we possibly could, just to give it a try, you know. And
go for the top, yeah.
We went for the top. And remember what I was just talking about, the archangels of the four directions? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There's four major archangels in Jewish magical system, Christian magical system, even Islamic magical system. There's four major archangels, and they stand for the four directions, and they're attributed to the four elements, you know, fire, water, air, and earth, and we see that these four great archangels are the first fractals of the great name Yod Heh Vav Heh, which we pronounce Jehovah. So it's like they're so big, they're one quarter of God. Okay, each archangel is one quarter of the absolute intelligence of creation, and so you can imagine how disinterested one quarter of the supreme consciousness might be in your problems. They're really not going to care that much. It's not their job. They do care, but they care on such a level that it would seem like disinterest to us. Well, the angel that we contacted at first would be like the equivalent of the first letter. Let's say the angel's characteristics are completely expressed in the letters of their names. And the first letter of each of their name, their initial letter, contained the essence of the entire angel. Well, the angel that we called was the equivalent of a four-letter name that was made up of the initials of all four archangels.
Oh, my goodness. So this was mega, mega, mega.
This is mega, mega, mega. The effect of the ceremony is in a vision that it has, and when you do it with somebody else or do it in a group, one person acts as the receiver, or they receive the vision and tell everybody about it. And when you do it yourself, you get the vision and hope you've got the wit to write it down later, you know. And the angel pops up, David Wilson, who passed away just a few years ago, marvelous seer, clairvoyant. It was one of his first ever operations where he actually, you know, sat and scried or had the vision. And this is where we discovered he was such a marvelous clairvoyant. But anyway, the angel appears to him, and he describes it, and he can keep on describing the vision as it's taking place, and we can ask questions and everything through the angel. And the angel appeared as described him sort of like a very snobby British actor.
Accent and all, huh?
With accent and all, very posh, and we would ask it things, and it wouldn't be like it was Well, like one of the questions that I ask about 2 or 3 weeks into to our working with this angel was, incidentally, the angel's name, the letters in the name were E-H-N-B, E-H-N-B. And that's the initial letters of Exharp, Hakama, Nanta, Bitum, which is like the four archangels. And it was getting so, this angel seemed to know everything about everything because it was so universal in its intelligence. But the difficulty was trying to limit the content of the answers, because the answers were so universal that they were answering every possible conceivable level of meaning of our questions.
Oh, my goodness. Mm.
And so we had to get very, very, very specific in how we phrased the questions. And finally, I asked, because I was curious about this, the nature of what we all look at as previous incarnations. And I know in my head that time as we think of it is very fragile and really doesn't exist in the same way that we think about it, and we're obliged to think about time. Time is only real, you know, in this one very, very narrow, limited dimension that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea of previous incarnations, you know, from this point of view, it seems like there's consecutive incarnations, and the previous ones are in the past, and the future ones are in the future, but there really isn't any past or future, truly the way we think of it. And so I asked this angel, are you aware of our narrow, limited ideas of our present existence and our previous existences and our future existences? Are you aware of how we view that? And the answer from this very snobby Englishman with garish jewelry was yes, I understand how you, I know how you view it, and it's almost nothing like you think. Okay. And I said, okay, I'll give you that. Okay. But giving you that, can you show us a vision of one of my previous incarnations? And he says, oh, yeah, that's easy enough to do because it's happening right now.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And I said, okay, show me. And David described what he was seeing in his vision. And the vision of the angel disappears, and there is like another scene just opens up, and it's the rooftop of a flat building, a white stuccoed building, and David can look out, and he said, I don't see very many trees. I do see what looks like telegraph wires or wiring on poles, and there's a wire strung across the street from the building that we're on the top of here, and goes to the other side of the street to another building. And so he says it must be, you know, at least 1870 something, because you know there appears to be telegraph wires or telephone wires. And he says it looks like a Middle Eastern or a very arid sort of maybe a little bit bigger than a village, but not, it doesn't seem like it's a big town or anything. And he says, oh, now I see people, and I see a bunch of teenage boys, and I believe this one is you, because he's pretty old, and he's already got a big mustache.
Must be you, Lon.
And the boys are laughing, and I see a pole. It looks like a pole or a rod or something. And you're picking up the pole, and your friends are laughing, and you're walking toward that wire that's strung between the two buildings, and you're balancing the pole as if you're playing like a wire walker, and you're. Oh my! And you're stepping out onto the wire, and yeah, well, and you fall and you're dead.
So much for that life.
So much.
It's a short one, huh?
Okay, this was probably 1980 or so when during this class, but back in 1966. When I started college, I met a guy named Ed Young, and Ed Young's father was a very famous stage hypnotist, and he had a big show in Vegas, and Ed was a kid my age, maybe 19 or 20 years old, and I went to school with him, and or college, and. When I found out that he was a hypnotist, I said, "Oh, can you hypnotize me?" You know, and he says, "Yeah." He says, "What I like doing is regressing people to previous incarnations." And I go, "Wow, I want to do that!" You know, and so when I was like 17, 18 years old, this guy hypnotized me and. Sent me back to past birth and everything, and I didn't feel hypnotized or anything, but I made up this story where I was a wire walker.
Oh my goodness!
And that I had a pole in my hand and I was bouncing on a wire and I stepped out and I was looking down my nose, keeping my head erect, looking down my nose at the bar I was holding, and I was looking down through a big mustache.
Oh, my goodness.
And I fell.
Whoa.
Now, I had forgotten all about that hypnotic regression thing. I wasn't thinking about that. I wasn't, you know, thinking real loud, and David picked up and read my mind or anything. Well, he may have. Who knows? He may have plucked it out, but I certainly wasn't consciously thinking about it or even consciously remembering that. But when he described what happened in the angelic vision, it all came back to me, and I said, oh, my God, this is really interesting. And from the next 3 years, we did class two nights a week. And specialized in this Enochian magic, angelic communication. And so what I'm saying is, angelic contact can be extremely personal. It can be extremely cozy and warm and fuzzy if that's the fractal you're tuning your consciousness into at any given moment. But it can be huge and dispassionate and disinterested in your personal coziness or comfort zone if you're not tuned into to that that level, if you're tuned into a huge, massive level that concerns itself with with universes eating each other, it's not really going to be very cozy.
And it's not going to care about the fact that you might not be able to pay your rent. It's like that's
correct.
Just so insignificant
right.
to a being of that size and stature. So, yeah, so it's kind of it's a very interesting explanation that you've just given on what communication with these super beings can be like. And now I have a question for you with the Enochian group that you had. Did you find that in contacting these super angels, these meta angels, was it easier to do that with a group, or is that something that you could have also done individually?
Oh, the best way is to do it by yourself.
Really?
The very best way. The advantage of group working is you do it. How much stuff don't you do by yourself? Okay.
Good point.
Yeah.
The advantage of group workings, at least initially, number one, you find out you live through it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You sort of support each other. You
mm-hmm.
know that at the end of the evening, Constance is going to serve tea, and we're going to laugh at stuff, okay?
Right.
You
right.
realize that you live through it. Even uncomfortable things, you realize you're mm-hmm. going to live through it. And as far as magic goes, it's almost like, oh, maybe I'll just sit and read about this stuff. Maybe I'll just try to understand it intellectually, and then I'll get some kind of illumination out of my education. And very often we replace this theoretical minutia with practical hands-on experience. The minutia only truly makes sense to you after you've tried and failed and succeeded and failed and half succeeded and half failed. It really takes practice. It's like everything else in life. And the advantage of group workings is everybody can see it in action, and we find out that we live through it.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Gosh. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a whole different perspective on angels, and so appreciate you sharing it. We should probably take a break, Colleen.
Yes, I didn't want to cut Lon off because
no,
it's
I didn't
so
want to
fascinating.
I'm sorry. It's hard to
no,
open
no.
my hey. Mouth and close it in 3 hours.
We're going to take a break. Everybody stay tuned. If you have a question for Lon, call 646-478-0828, and we will be right back.
Your property tax bill. Have you seen it lately? It's frightening. Your property taxes are going up while your home value is going down. It's time to fight back and win. For the real truth about the property tax system, get attorney Pat Quintilian's book, Are You Getting Screwed on Your Property Taxes? How to Find Out and How to Fix It. Attorney Quintilian answers all your questions and gives you the facts you need to fight a property tax bill that is spiraling out of control. You'll also read about what happens to property owners who don't check their property records, only to find out too late they're taxed on square footage, fixtures, and even buildings that they don't own. Is this happening to you? Learn your rights. Buy Attorney Pat Quintilian's book today. Are You Getting Screwed on Your Property Taxes? How to Find Out and How to Fix It. Available on Amazon.com.
Sometimes life can be a challenge. Would you like insight and guidance to help you make the best choices right now? Contact Helene at angelslighthouse.com to make your personal appointment for a psychic reading or energy alignment. Helene is a direct channel to the angelic realm and is remarkably capable of connecting to the living as well as to your loved ones on the other side. Helene is available to clients all over the world via phone or Skype, and it's simple to set up a group reading anywhere. Visit angelslighthouse.com, where you'll find an easy way to schedule right online. And while you're there, sign up for the Angels Lighthouse newsletter and receive information on all the free energy circles, giveaways, and jewelry with a message. Visit angelslighthouse.com and contact Helene today.
Welcome back, everyone, and thank you for staying tuned. If you have a question for our fascinating guest, Lon Milo Duquette, please call 646-478-0828. We do have a caller on the line who we'll be picking up in a moment, Lon, if you don't mind. But I actually wanted to squeeze my question in here for a moment. You know, there's been a lot of energy changes around the planet and so forth, and lately, myself and many others are hearing from this giant galactic cosmic energy that's coming through. And do you think that they are angels or they're just intelligence, universal intelligence?
Well, I think they're one and the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I have my my own, you know, opinions on the major, what I think is a major shift in human consciousness that's taking place right now, and the technical explanation of it, at least on one level, could definitely be described as coming in contact with a large, you know, transcendent galactic intelligence. You could certainly look at it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think we go through cycles. I think consciousness goes through cycles in the same way as any other energy form has pulses that increase, decrease. I think our juxtaposition with other consciousness centers that we could, as you know, from a physics point of view, you know, say galactic centers of other systems and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we look at the literature of the Vedas,
mm-hmm,
and other very ancient systems that seem to have originated during a time when we were all a whole lot smarter than we are now. we can see in their mythology and in their imagery and the metaphors of their language, which oftentimes deal with gods and the family squabbles of gods and things like that.
Yeah.
We can sort of see this at play, or similar cycles,
mm-hmm,
that humanity is or that we have gone through before. Again, where I see everything as an aspect of consciousness, even the quantum theorists or the quantum physicists are now just coming right out and saying on PBS Nova that the nature of all of this is consciousness,
mm-hmm,
and us being consciousness terminals, the relevance of all of this is reflected in us,
right?
And
Well, I have a big question for demons for you, a big question about demons. But what I'd like to do now, if you don't mind, is welcome Jacob live on the air. He's calling in with a question, Lon. Is that okay with you?
Sure.
Okay, great. Hi, Jacob. You're live on the air.
Hello. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, we're great.
Fine. Hi, Jacob.
Hi. Lon, let me just say I'm a huge fan of your work. I've yet to actually read your books yet, but I've seen a lot of your stuff and your music. Huge fan of you.
Oh, thank you.
Anyway, my question was regarding visions, and let me say this in context. I myself consider myself first and foremost a skeptic and a naturalist, but also with an occult leaning. And when people describe a vision, as you had mentioned, does it mean something literally coming into, like, I don't know, like, you know, angel or demon or whatever, what have you, you know, physically appearing in your living room, or is it something you see more with your mind's eye?
I see it with my mind's eye. I've never seen anything except a physical person doing physical things in my physical living room. I don't even see holographic images or pixelated. Well, I've seen a couple of pixelated things, and I've been a little pixelated in my life. But I see
That's
it in
wonderful.
Okay, I see it in my mind's eye. But the caveat is that what you're seeing in your mind's eye is just as real as the physical flesh and blood person, or just as your inner temple is just as much a temple as your brick and mortar temple, and the visionary experience or the visionary skill comes in being able to shift the center of your consciousness to that mind's eye. When you fall asleep at night, you're sitting there or you're laying there thinking about stuff, and you know you're awake, and you're thinking about stuff, and there comes a time when your thoughts actually turn into visual things, and that
right.
that's a little a border area between waking and dream state, and you're not aware of when that happens, you know, except if you get, you know, woken up right in the middle of it and you go, oh wow, that's what happened. I just slipped between worlds there. Well, it wasn't so much that you slip between worlds, it's just you shifted the center of your conscious focus to something else. And you get very, very good. The magician gets very, very good at identifying with the focus shift. And so it's like when you, in school, I just stared out the window and daydreamed. Okay, that's how I spent.
We can all relate to that.
Yeah, okay. I just daydreamed my way through school. But it would be like if those daydreams became the new center of my focus. And in magic, you actually the reason behind certain magical ceremonies is to open up just a very, very select and very narrow slit of different consciousness. And part of the study of magic is to give yourself a good theoretical idea of where in the consciousness spectrum that little slit is. And then you get really good at identifying it. So I'm just seeing it. I'm just a vaporous daydream, but it becomes very, very real, very, very solid. But I'm not seeing any of it with the cones and rods of my of my eyes. Okay.
Right. That's what had me confused, because some dude once told me that he got a Ouija board and he captured a 30-foot-tall crimson demon thing, and then he found Jesus. You know.
Well, good for him.
Yeah, whatever floats your boat. But
yeah.
So that's what I was wondering, because I had a vision once while walking where an angel, a light angel and a dark angel, both side by side, showed me a church with a man beating the parishioners with a club and holding them with fear. And I was wondering, is this just my imagination, or is this something truly significant? And
well, where all of this stuff takes place, the mechanics of the visionary experience is imagination. Your imagination is really the television set of visionary experience and magical experience. Imagination is more real than you can imagine. Okay. And we've tested it out. We've done little trial runs of imagination. But imagination is one of the biggest aspects, facets of consciousness that we have. As a matter of fact, what you're thinking of as objective reality is 99.99% your imagination already. You're already holding even your mundane life together with imagination. Don't shortchange imagination. It really is your greatest magical tool. The reason that we can even deal with these abstract concepts is because we can wrap them up in tight little accurate metaphoric packages called angels, spirits, demons, intelligences, and make them act as personages, because in reality they are personages. Okay, but if we would dissect the mechanics of it all, we would be completely drowned in the minutiae of what's going on. A race car driver does not need to know exactly every movement of every part of his race car. He would go crazy. He would not be able to drive his race car if he was worried about every little tiny thing that was going on with the car. It would overwhelm him. Instead, he looks at the car as a giant metaphor, and he gets in and he drives the car. Well, the same way with magic. We would go absolutely crazy if we knew the minutiae of absolutely every natural force in the universe and our own consciousness adventure. It would drive us crazy. But we can personify all of this stuff in a giant imaginative metaphor. And that the metaphor that we create, the imaginative metaphor we create, is far more accurate than anything that we could do if we dissected every little... Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Okay.
It makes a lot more sense than I thought.
Okay.
Well, thank you for the call, Jacob.
Don't worry, you'll get confused again. Clarity doesn't last very long.
Grab it while you can.
Grab it while you can. Okay.
Thank you so much for calling, Jacob.
Thanks, Jacob.
No problem. You have a good day.
You too.
You too. That was a fascinating question, wasn't it?
It was. Perfect question.
We've got the best listeners. They come up with these fantastic questions. They're all like, they know the subject, and it's wonderful. So,
it is.
Helene, I was very intrigued. You have a demon question for Lon. And
yes,
in the
I
next
do. It's
hour,
actually,
we should cover demons, right?
It's actually a two-part question, but I don't want Lon to spend a lot of time on it because I know he has so much depth of information. It's incredible.
Oh,
but
my next answer will be short.
No,
no you do. You're amazing,
whatever.
Lon. But what I noticed in the past year or so, while all this light was coming into the planet and all the energetics were changing, was that my feeling about it and what I heard from angels and others about it was that all of this light coming in, all of these changes that they're trying to affect for our higher consciousness, all of this connection that everyone's making, was sort of like... yes, all this beautiful change is coming, but with it, it's bringing other things walking through that grand gateway. And also, it's disrupting the energy of people who are comfortable. And so it seemed like demons and flying monkeys were coming from everywhere. And I was getting tons of calls. Clear my house. Clear my attachment. There's something ugly with me, you know?
Like right, yeah, yeah.
Sudden flurry of just one call after another. Take this away, take this away. What do you attribute that to?
Just with the metaphor of light and darkness, when you turn on the light or you turn up the light in the room, the parts that aren't receiving that light directly, you know, appear in more contrasted darkness.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're just being illuminated.
And the idea that when there's an influx or a turning up of the higher frequency of consciousness, you can liken it to when you turn up the sound on a public address system where you got a microphone and an amplifier. And you've got it set real nice. You got it set and balanced, and you've got your treble and your bass all balanced, so that when you go up and speak or sing into that public address system, it amplifies the sound pleasantly. Okay, but if you then would start to turn up the volume or the gain on that public address system, you're not doing anything evil per se. Not only that, but you're actually increasing the power and the light. And you're saying, well, if that little bit is good, this is better. Okay, you know. And not only that, but if you would take the walls out, you could hear now what was being said. You could hear it across the street or across the across town. Okay, but if your building is still, if the vehicle, if the container for that building is still small, that sound starts to feed back, and it feeds back into the microphone, and the microphone feeds it into the amplifier. The amplifier amplifies it, and then it goes back into the microphone, and it goes back in the amplifier, and it becomes a terrible, terrible, unpleasant screech that your old consciousness is not used to dealing with. So it's look at your brain, look at your cranium of your skull as that building. Mm-hmm. And you've just turned up the power. You've just turned up the amplifier. And you haven't yet learned to make your cranium bigger.
Ah, okay.
And it's all focused. Okay. And so along with all of that good new volume is coming all of this unpleasantness that comes from your vehicle not being able to accommodate the new energy. And that manifests in our lives as the demons. There's your flying monkeys.
What an incredible explanation of that, because nothing was bothering me, Lon, but except for calls about please help me, you know, because I can't handle this. There's something really ugly here, and that's such an incredible explanation. Thank you.
That's perfect.
That sort of manifests where they say the. You know, when human consciousness undergoes a new wonderful advance in consciousness, it seems like for a short period of time at least, or for a period of time, that the smart people get incredibly smarter and wiser and everything else, and the idiots just keep getting more idiotic than they've ever been. Okay.
Well, we can't tolerate some vibrations anymore when we sort of expand, right? So,
it looks like a big polarity thing going on, but it's usually a good sign.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, yeah. But the second part of my question is really about another aspect of demonic energy. So, it's happened to me on occasion in the last few years that people have been hit by psychic attacks from others. And I'm totally understanding that, you know, your thought creates, it absolutely creates whatever. And so there are people who are practicing, you know, magic, or not exactly Enochian magic, but other kinds of modalities of working with energy, and they decide that they don't like their enemy, and so they send over all this ugly stuff to the other person. Have you found that there's been an increase in that sort of thing?
I haven't.
Yeah.
And it just may be that I am such a magical Pollyanna that I don't even rub elbows with that.
I don't either, but I'm getting calls from people who have that seems to be going on, you know.
And you know, I wish I could empathize more, but I do know that that fear is the absolutely worst thing for people who would like to start thinking along magical or spiritual lines.
Oh, absolutely.
It's poison. Fear is absolutely poison. And anybody that would even busy themselves with sending magical negative energy to someone else is already not a magician. Anybody that would busy themselves with that has already missed the magical boat so much that the only power that they can actually transmit is the power that their victim voluntarily allows.
And there you go, right there. Because what happens is the person who receives this energy is in such a deep well of fear that they can't even climb out of it. And no matter what anybody else, any other psychic does to help them, if they can't step out of the way of that fear, it just sort of multiplies on itself.
Right, and that in itself is a very real is a very real thing. It can make a person sick. It can make a person act irrationally, and it carries with it all of the negative effects of the worst of superstitious behavior.
So how would you instruct someone to climb out of that well of fear, Lon?
I ridicule it.
Okay.
I lovingly ridicule it, because I run into it too. I get phone calls too.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
The idea, in just a couple of minutes, if I can't put it in rational, almost funny perspective, they're dealing with issues that that aren't magical in nature, but they're more psychological in nature, the worst case scenario when people come to me like that is my advice to just stay away from magic for a while. Magic is exacerbating certain other pathologies you've got going on, and you're not helping yourself with magic. The biggest magic thing you can do at the moment, sir, is drop magic. Believe it or not, it sounds like a cliche and everything else, but the biggest banishing that a person can possibly do with negative energy of any kind is laughter. It's really hard, and I don't mean laughter for laughter's sake. I mean it's seeing the big joke in everything. Because there is, even the Hindus have a concept of the universal joke, you can flip a coin and say, well, for the rest of my life, I'm going to see everything as the universal tragedy or the universal joke. And because they are so infinite, both of these concepts, the universe is either complete sorrow or the universe is either complete joy. And what good does it do you to look at it as a tragedy? What good does it do to you? For it doesn't do any good. It short circuits you. It makes you miserable. It shortens your life. It blinds you. But to see the joy in it is transcendent. It's like bigger. The joy of life, the humor of existence is transcendent. It transcends good and it transcends evil. It turns good and evil into small g's and small e's. It's the big g. It's the big good. And it doesn't do you any good to look at things from a negative point of view. You could say, well, life all ends with death. Okay, if you focus on that, you're dead already.
Yes.
So why don't you just look at life is living? So just live. People ask me if I if I believe in life after death, and I said I believe in life after life,
Exactly.
From a rational point of view, I can't explain life after birth.
That's a good explanation of it all. You know, I've got a question in the chat room, Lon, I'd like to ask you. This is from Curb Stop Radio. They want to know, do many of the Christian and Jewish angels and demons have pre-Judeo-Christian origins?
I would say all of them.
Yeah.
I agree. That's a good question. That's a good answer.
The idea of looking at these fractals, and you know, I'm just starting to use the word fractal on this show. Okay.
Wow. We're honored.
You drug out another thing that I'm going to just use till it's tired. The whole idea of the universal hierarchy of consciousness is these fractal angels, archangels, spirits, intelligence, and stuff. We can see it in its written genesis. With the Babylonians and the Sumerians and the Babylonians, and that's where the Greek and the Hebrew Kabbalists got their spiritual worldview that in turn informed the Christian worldview. Milton, the idea of fallen angels, Paradise Lost, all of that is not from biblical sources, but from extra biblical sources. The extra materials rabbis have used for years, and the Apocrypha, such as the Book of Enoch and things like that. All of that is truly Babylonian and Sumerian in context, and so all of it has sort of pre-Christian things that they've just added new names to it. Well, we can see it very easily, an example of it with this rich culture of spiritual universe that was brought over from Africa with the slaves into the Caribbean and South America, and how easily these gods and spirits were transferred to the Roman Catholic saints.
Right. Yes.
So. We've seen it just right in front of us. We've seen it happen. It just with ease. How easily these concepts can just take on the trappings of a new religion because of whatever expedience is required for them to do so. So
they can be co-opted quite easily. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, I think it's time for another break. I'm sorry to take it because this is just incredible.
This is great information. Yes, and everybody stay tuned. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Sometimes life can be a challenge. Would you like insight and guidance to help you make the best choices right now? Contact Helene at angelslighthouse.com to make your personal appointment for a psychic reading or energy alignment. Helene is a direct channel to the angelic realm and is remarkably capable of connecting to the living as well as to your loved ones on the other side. Helene is available to clients all over the world via phone or Skype, and it's simple to set up a group reading anywhere. Visit angelslighthouse.com, where you'll find an easy way to schedule right online. And while you're there, sign up for the Angels Lighthouse newsletter and receive information on all the free energy circles, giveaways, and jewelry with a message. Visit angelslighthouse.com and contact Helene today.
Your property tax bill Have you seen it lately? It's frightening. Your property taxes are going up while your home value is going down. It's time to fight back and win. For the real truth about the property tax system, get attorney Pat Quintilian's book, Are You Getting Screwed on Your Property Taxes? How to Find Out and How to Fix It. Attorney Quintilian answers all your questions and gives you the facts you need to fight a property tax bill that is spiraling out of control. You'll also read about what happens to property owners who don't check their property records, only to find out too late they're taxed on square footage, fixtures, and even buildings that they don't own. Is this happening to you? Learn your rights. Buy attorney Pat Quintilian's book today. Are You Getting Screwed on Your Property Taxes? How to Find Out and How to Fix It. Available on Amazon.com.
Welcome back, and thank you for staying tuned. I'd just like to take a moment, Patricia, to thank the Blog Talk gods for allowing this show to be absolutely clear tonight.
Yes, thank you, Blog Talk gods. Although I'm noticing that the chat room is having some problems. People are getting bumped out there, so apologies to everybody trying to communicate with us through the chat room. But. Mm-hmm. Oh, but anyways, it's good to thank Blog Talk gods and
we're on the air, I hope so.
We are, I hope. Yeah, somebody's listening, I think. Yeah. But hey, Lon, you've got a really interesting workshop coming up called Love Your Demons, Love Yourself. Is that the name of it?
Right. I'm doing it with T. Thorne Coyle. If any of our listeners are familiar with her incredible work. We did like a 90-minute preview of it at a PanceaCon, the big convention in San Jose back in February. And so we're really looking forward to this one, too. And in a way, it's an all-day seminar that has a very hard look on what one's personal demons are and what they are not, and a look on how we should deal with them in overcoming our own life challenges. So.
Yeah, well, what I love about what you wrote here is that where you say, whether we think they are out there or in here, we all have to deal with our demons, or they will deal with us.
I love
that, and it is so true.
Yeah, people, I've written a couple of books concerning Solomonic magic, named after King Solomon, that raised and conjured demons to help build the great temple of God. In other words, he used demons to do something very holy. And another name for that is Goetia, G-O-E-T-I-A, or Goetic magic. And as a matter of fact, the book that you're giving away today, The Key to Solomon's Key, is a good half of that book deals with the practice and the technique. It's a how-to book for Solomonic magic if you want to do that.
Yeah, it's a great book. Again, fabulous book. I recommend it highly. And yeah, well, and again, see, I mean, I remember when I worked for Robert Monroe from the Monroe Institute years ago, and you know what he did with sound and training people through the binaural beat to be able to have a different point of consciousness that would be outside of their physical body. And he always used to say, the only thing that people have to be afraid of out there is themselves.
That's right.
It's themselves.
Yeah.
And all these demons that people think they're seeing or these attacks that they feel that they're having, could these not, in fact, just be aspects of their own consciousness that they haven't owned?
As a matter of fact, I can't think of anything in the entire universe that isn't an aspect that you can perceive that isn't already an aspect of your consciousness. I wrote a book called Low Magic, and the subtitle of the book is "It's All in Your Head. You Just Have No Idea How Big Your Head Is."
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the idea is that for all practical purposes, there is no outside of yourself. And we already know that our consciousness, although it might be centered in our meat brain and our meat nervous system, still transcends our bodies and our brains. We know our mind, if you want to call it that, is bigger than our physical bodies. We know that consciousness is a bigger thing. I mean, they've done autopsies on people that had been walking and talking and functioning, and they do an autopsy and they see that there hadn't been enough brain in there to move an amoeba.
Wow.
Something else is going on. And the Kabbalists have this marvelous way of looking at human consciousness and breaking it up into four major sections. And the first one they call the nephesh, which is the animal soul, which may as well be our physical bodies and our physical nervous systems and our brains and everything. Then right behind that is our intellect, okay, which still may have its it may be plugged in to the animal soul. But it is something in and of itself. It's our imagination. It's our thoughts. It's our intellect. And just behind that is really more what we truly are. Okay, and it's called the neshama, and they call it the soul intuition. And the neshama in all of us is something that is not limited by space, and it's not limited by time. In my opinion, the phenomena of a mother waking up in the middle of the night when her child, way maybe on the other side of town or the other side of the world, has just been in an accident, say. She wakes up and goes, "Oh my gosh, my child is, something bad has happened to my child." Okay, it really does happen. It's so common that you can't even get an article in Fate magazine published about it, okay? It just happens.
Exactly.
A lot, okay?
Right.
Now, if that child would have been on the moon, mom would have got the message at the exact same instant. And if that child had been 50 light years away on another planet, in another galaxy, the mother would have got the message right away. I can't prove this, but this is where I'm going with this. If the child was 80 million light years away, she would have still got the message. Now, it wasn't that the child sent a message faster than the speed of light. The child didn't have to, because no matter where that child goes in the universe, the child will never escape the mother's neshama. That's how big our neshamas are. I mean, you're on the East Coast and I'm on the West Coast, and the three of us are wallowing in each other's neshama right now. Okay.
Wow.
Okay, our
neshama, I had no idea.
It's like our neshama is like the wall-to-wall jello of the universe, and we're just like floating pieces of pineapple in it, okay? And the neshama is that part of each of our souls that is not restricted by time or space, neither is there any end to it. So that means that there is no outside of ourselves. It's all internal.
So it makes it very powerful when, for example, if people signed up and did this workshop, which is going to be Saturday, May 11th, and you can go to Lon's Facebook page and read all about it and sign up there. The cost is all there, and space is limited. So those who are interested in the Oakland, California area can definitely attend if they'd like. And you know, what I like about what you're – I'm sorry, go ahead. Did you want to say something else about space?
No, I'm thanking you for the plug.
Oh, well, of course, my pleasure. But, I know that people can really benefit by doing a workshop like this, because part of what you're also talking about with this this tie-up of this vision that we have of something outside of us is attacking us and it's a demon. And I mean, that's basically, if I understand this correctly from what you've said here, is it's power that's bound up in a certain way, that's taking on a certain form that we need to own and find a way to work with that is going to be positive. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. I wish I would have said that otherwise, because you said it better in two sentences than I've been trying to say for all night. Yes,
well,
absolutely.
Thank you, and you're welcome to use that.
Okay.
I give it freely. But I do think this is so important, because with our shadow side, which is what a lot of psychologists call it, or, mm-hmm. you know, magicians are calling it the demons, it's still about ownership. It's still about understanding why these things are in our energy or why we're feeling attacked in some way, and then getting the tools together to be able to work with this energy and to make it work for us. I mean, because I really love what you say, that if you don't deal with this, then they're going to deal with you.
They're already dealing with you. Yeah,
they already are. Yes.
Yeah. People, sometimes are very surprised when I say on occasion to do something, some heavy lifting in my magical life, I will evoke one of these demons and send it off on an errand, And they say, you say that you're dedicated to the great work and you you seem like a nice guy.
But you have a demon errand boy?
But you got a demon errand boy? I don't get it, you know? And I say, well, you know, the thing is, it's not that I'm doing this because I want to deal with the demons. It's just I've got a problem because the demons are already dealing with me. And the idea is get them working for you rather than working against you. They're just blind forces. And the thing is, you've got a couple of these blind forces that are working against your best interests. They could just as easily work for you. It's like on Academy Award night, you know, a movie star gets the Academy Award and they thank everybody in the movie. You know, they thank the yes. the makeup person and they thank the writers and they thank everybody. Well, you know, they're only thanking those guys because they won the Academy Award. Those same people could have just sabotaged the whole project, you know.
Yeah.
The makeup person could have made them look bad. The writers could have written a bad movie. But no. Some great will put all of these workers together toward a very, very positive end. And that director or that producer was the magician, okay, who was responsible for whipping all those people into line. And sometimes he had to be rough with them. Sometimes,
right.
Sometimes it had to be tough love. And sometimes there's some of them he had to, like, bribe. There's some of them he had to threaten. There's some of them he just had to reward. There's some of them he just had to, you know, smooth with. Each one had a different way they needed to be handled in order to work for the project. And that's just what these Goetic spirits are. At the moment, they're people that already should be working for you, and if you don't have a handle on them, they're just expending their blind energy along the lines of least resistance in your life, and that is seldom for your best, in your best interest until you direct them.
I love that. See, that's a perfect explanation of what I think everybody deals with, whether they want to get conscious about it or not. It's another thing. But certainly, you have a pathway to handling this type of energy. So it's not working against you and not just a blind force that's flying around you. Yeah, I love that. That's great.
Now, remember a few years back when you first contacted me about my book, My Life with the Spirits?
Oh, yeah, I love that book. It's my favorite book, everybody, and you all should go buy it and read it. And if you know somebody in Hollywood, tell them to make it into a movie. My Life with the Spirits is my favorite, favorite, favorite book.
Well, I think it's my favorite, too. But there was a story when I was a very, very young magician. My financial situation was just so terrible. I just had gotten out of the music business, and I was really not prepared for anything else in life. I wasn't trained to hold a job even, and things were, Jean-Paul was just like 3 years old, and we were very, very poor and hungry. And it looked like I wasn't even going to be able to pay the rent and everything else. But I was getting into magic, and I was looking at this process of Solomonic magic, and there's a whole list of 72 demons that can do stuff for you. And one of them seemed like he was pretty harmless and could give me the dignity to feed my family and stuff. So I decided to evoke this spirit, and this was against my magical teacher's wishes, but I was desperate, and so I evoked the spirit into a triangle, and nothing seemed to be happening, I evoked it again. I did everything I was supposed to do. I thought, you know, I was treating it like it was a recipe, like I was going to make a apple tart or something. When nothing happened, I just sat down in the circle and had a little nervous breakdown. And I started to beat myself up. I started to say, well, you're just a loser. You know, I said, you give up a career in music, because you can't really, you don't really have the discipline to pay your dues or the self discipline to not overdo the excesses of that lifestyle. You got a beautiful wife, you got a beautiful kid, and you can't even feed them. Then I went back in my mind and I started to replay all the things in my life ever since I was a little kid where I seemed to snatch defeat out of the jaws of victory.
Kind of backwards.
And my whole life is just a litany of these indolent moments of me having the world at my feet and then just blowing it.
Ugh, and, painful.
And I started to beat myself up over that. And as I was beating myself up over that, I looked into the triangle and I did see something start to pixelate in the triangle.
Hmm.
The point is, I pulled out the demon. I pulled it out of my own neshama, my own animal soul. I found what the problem was. I found out why I was broke. I found out why I couldn't feed my family. I found out why I was in that position that I was in, and it was my fault.
Hmm.
I identified the demon in me, and I had the right to evoke it because it was already mine. It was all... I pulled it out of my own soul, if you will, and I threw it in the triangle, and I saw what the problem was, and the problem was me, and my name was the name of that demon.
Wow.
And then I realized exactly what these things are. I realized that the reason this spirit can help me is because the spirit is the reason I've got the problem. And it's all in my own lap. It's all me. And so for the first time in my life, I've identified my problem, and I had the opportunity to externalize it, to have a conversation with it, to talk to it, to tell it to get its act together, and it was the first time that I'd ever had that conversation with myself.
And how empowering, my goodness. I mean, that's a real transformation, and it's very empowering when you can have that moment of clarity and actually see something that's been sabotaging you all this time.
Right, right. And I go on to tell how that all manifested in my life and everything. But and people say, well, was that just a psychological thing with you, or was it real? I said, no, you don't understand. The psychological thing is more real than you can possibly imagine. And
well, of course, because it's the one thing that's really making things happen. And
right.
Especially if it's hidden and doesn't have a name and doesn't have an identity that you are aware of, it makes it even more powerful, right?
It makes it even more powerful, yeah.
And dangerous, yeah.
Right.
So giving this air to breathe and being able to name it gives you power over it so that you don't have to suffer the effects anymore.
Right. And in your own way, fixing it, putting it to work to help you rather than to half the time working against you, is, in a sense, redeeming the demon. The Eliphas Levi, the famous 19th century magician, had a poem called The Magician. And he said, their faces and their shapes are terrible and strange. These demons, by my might, to angels I will change.
Oh.
And that's what you do. You, as you are enlightened, you raise the spiritual status of your demon. You save, you redeem the spirits beneath you. Your idea isn't to take something out of hell and put it to work with you and send it back to hell. Okay?
Okay.
You transform hell. You take
wow.
it with you. Eventually, you turn all hells into heaven.
That is, this is like, my mind is spinning right now. Can you tell?
It's so profound. I mean, really.
That is.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful, wonderful statement that is just, it's touching me from head to toe. That's what you just said, Lon. That's amazing. I love it.
Well, it's people call that type of magic low magic and infernal magic, but to tell you the truth, magic doesn't get any higher than that. It's as high as it's the highest spiritual discipline as any of them, and it's got a bad reputation because it's a rough crowd that you deal with at first.
Yeah, that is a rough crowd. But when you put it into this framework where you are responsible for raising these demons up and transforming them into angels, I mean, my goodness, I mean, I'm just thinking of the imagery with that alone, the power of that. And instead of banishing them or sending them into the fire or whatever, this whole transformation aspect is just, that's the way to go. That's where the power is.
Yeah. Well, that's,
are you going to write a book about that? I think you should.
Yeah, you know, I'm still trying.
I think you just found your next book, or at least I found one I'd like to read that you wrote. I mean, really, because it just, to me, this is so inspirational on such a deep level. Don't you think, Colleen? This is really great.
It's inspirational, but it's also a very, I think, difficult concept for people who are already rigid in their thinking to wrap their mind around.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we have this very defined concept of good and evil.
Right.
And, you know, the idea of going into a reform school and transmuting everything into love and light, people will say, I'm not going near that. I'm not touching that. That doesn't exist within me, which is what I've heard from many people. And so it's a really difficult concept, I think, for people to understand, really, in its elevation of what it really is.
Well, the best that you can do is understand it yourself,
mm-hmm.
and through the example of your own light bulb going off, you lighten up everybody else as much as they're capable of being lit up.
Yes, that's true.
so that's, you know, true. I like helping people and I have friends and acquaintances, and to tell you the truth, I love absolutely everybody and everything, and there's only so much that I can do, even when people ask for my input and my help. If they really don't know what they're asking for, there's only so much I can do besides just love them to death, you know.
Well, there is no magic wand. The wand is within ourselves, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, again, what you're addressing is something a lot of people don't want to hear, which is self-responsibility. I mean, people don't like that. They want to hear it's somebody else's fault. It's coming from outside.
Right.
You know, they don't want to take responsibility. When you talk about we are so much in terms of consciousness, and a lot of people don't want to go there because, again, the responsibility comes right along with it.
Right.
And it's the difference between an adult and a child, I think, in terms of the adult taking responsibility to raise their own vibration, take responsibility for their shadow side, for their whatever you want to call it, you know,
mm-hmm.
whether you call it demons or shadows or whatever. There's a certain responsibility that you take in as an adult and work with. But when you're a child, you just want to say, hey, you did it to me. You know, there
right.
it is, the demon outside of me. It's attacking me. It's this, it's that. And it's not to say that these energy systems aren't real. That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
I know
right.
they are. But it's what do we take responsibility for in the way we work with them.
So
I think that's more the thing that people have a real hard time with.
I know, and when you think about it, we're very, very lucky that our lives have been such that it put us in a position where we can at least appreciate the big picture, and not everybody can. It just might very well be that everybody's just this time around in this little trap of dimensional space time. They've got other things to work out. And they work out in the way that that they have to do it. I mean, I've just been very lucky in my life because I was trapped into that very narrow, inflexible, dualistic trap. I was as stuck there as anybody. I was just lucky to be. I don't know if you call it audacity or just youthful folly, whatever it was. I stumbled into a great, from my point of view, a great truth.
Well, you have. And again, I love what you're saying about all this. I feel that, you know, between your fractal explanation today that you started out with and where we are now, you've really imparted a tremendous amount of information and knowledge to us and our audience. And it does, you know, this is what I love about this show, because you and our other guests come on the show and they really make us think about things a little differently or a lot differently. And it gives you the room to explore many new approaches and perspectives to what we think our reality is. And it's wonderful. It's like going on a big vacation every time we come on the show and there's somebody new who's going to talk about a new exciting adventure. And your life, Lon, has been quite an adventure. And it's just amazing what some of the things you've done. You're now doing singing. I mean, you've gone back to your roots as a performer, and you're getting booked in, like, places in New York City and L.A. It's like, how are you doing this?
It's so crazy. It's just, you know, I never expected a fifth midlife crisis.
And you have a CD available, so if people want to listen to your music, they can purchase that.
Right. I got a couple of them, and they're working on a third. So
tell us the names of your CDs and where we can buy them.
The first one is called I'm Baba Lon.
Cute.
And the other one's called Baba Lon 2.
You like that Baba
Lon? And
that, huh?
And the photo cover on that is awesome. I love it.
So I've got eight arms like Shiva.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you have a third coming out when?
I got a third coming out. It should be out by by fall, because I've only got one more to record, and then we've got to get it mastered and everything. So it should be out late summer or fall. I'm not sure what the name of it's going to be, but it's some more of my wilder and more blasphemous one. So it'll be for the real fans.
The hardcore Babylon fans.
Right.
Oh, this is great. Now let me ask you, so you said your favorite book of all the books you've written, which are so many, 16 total, is My Life with the Spirits. Is that what you'd say?
My Life with the Spirits is still my number one favorite book, yeah.
I love that book. And this is a book, everybody, I want to tell you, when you read it, you will laugh out loud. I mean, when I picked up this book and started reading it at night, my husband's like, what the heck are you laughing about? I mean, I would just burst out laughing, and it was, your writing is just phenomenal. And I can see why people like in your writing style to Mark Twain. You're a great storyteller. And you really tickle my funny bone, and I know everybody else feels the same way who reads your material. There's so much humor, and it goes back to what you were saying about, you know, see the joy, see the joke in the universe rather than the tragedy. And it's, your books are just like that. I mean, they're filled with humor, filled with great information, and I highly recommend all your books to everybody listening. They're all worth buying. And as Lon said, you don't have to read them, but just buy them.
Oh, bless your heart.
So, my goodness, will you please promise us that you'll come back? Because I know we didn't even get to do the Enochian angel call tonight.
Oh, I'd be happy to. I love talking to you guys.
All right.
Thank you. Yeah, I would love to hear the call again. It was so beautiful the last time you did it. Yeah.
Yeah. And,
okay.
And
We'll do an Enochian thing next time.
Well, we really should, because I know that right after we did that show, I believe for, what was it, for the December 21st, you recited all of the Enochian calls.
Yeah.
And that was amazing. I mean, I got up and did this. I don't know, it was the middle of the night or early in the morning.
Right, some, pretty late, yeah.
Yeah, some ungodly hour, but that was okay because it was phenomenal. It was just a real life-changing experience to hear you recite each and every call, each and every level being opened for the Enochian angel calls. It was just great. So I really hope someday, and I know we've talked about this before, you'll put that on a CD.
Oh, yeah, but that's not quite in the works, but it's definitely in the plans, because I got to do it while I'm still vertical.
We hope it's forever.
What a wonderful evening this has been, really.
Hasn't this been great?
And thank you so much, Lon. You just imparted so much wisdom to everybody who is listening and everybody who will download the archive. It's just incredible, and I can't wait till you come back to do the calls again because they were awesome last time.
Well, it's been nonstop fun, and thank you guys so much for inviting me on.
Well,
thank you,
and our love to you and to Constance.
Okay. I will hug her for you.
Please do.
Thanks.
Please hug that beautiful lady. Thank you so much, and hug yourself, too.
I will.
Good night, Lon.
Thank you so much.
You bet.
He's just such an awesome guest.
I'm just so honored that I know this man. I mean, he is remarkable, just mm-hmm. remarkable. I mean, he's so talented in so many ways and mm-hmm. really brilliant in the way he's able to put words on these metaphysical experiences. I mean, you know how hard it is to talk about the angelic realm.
Oh,
about
it's difficult.
Demons,
it's
entities,
difficult.
Whatever. And he
yeah.
really knows, you know, the right words to say, that, and it just starts to make so much sense, doesn't it?
It does, but the thing is that he's so deep into this. He's been doing this all his life,
mm-hmm.
and it's got to be, you know, over 30 years anyway, if not 40. And so the thing is that I really think that people who are listening to this tonight really have to go over some of the material and some of the things he said again, because stepping out of fear is the most important thing anybody can do to change their life, to change their perspective. And when you step out of fear in connection with any entity that you see, it's just total freedom. It's total freedom to be able to laugh in the face of whatever you see and accept it as an aspect of yourself. And then, you know what happens after that, Patricia?
What?
It doesn't bother with you anymore because it can't get anywhere.
That's right. It has to change into something else if it's going to stay in your field.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely. And again, mm-hmm. that's such great wisdom about finding a way to deal with the fear, because the fear mm-hmm. is toxic, and it attracts other toxic things, which you don't want that, right?
No. No, we don't want that.
No, I don't either.
No. So who's our next fabulous
guest?
Oh,
my goodness. Next week we have Chantal Monty, and she is...
Oh, is she lovely.
Oh. She's lovely, and she's an expert in Kundalini. She's going to talk about the chakras, Kundalini, manifesting, oh, my God, awakening. We have got a great guest coming up in Chantal. She's
really profoundly, good. Profoundly knowledgeable about higher consciousness.
She's so
and
knowledgeable.
And will give us her own unique perspective on that. And I'd have to say it's in alignment with what Lon was talking about.
Very much so. And she's mm-hmm. also going to help callers who call in and want to know maybe where they're blocked, where they have a chakra issue. She will help
wow.
them identify it. So it's going to be personal. You know, people call in. They want their chakra questions answered.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to have a general overview and great information from Chantal next week.
That'll be a ball.
I know. It's going to be another wild time.
Well, it's springtime in New England, and we're happy. We hope we were live on the air tonight, Patricia.
Definitely. Always good to help with that.
Yeah. And it's been a blast.
It has. Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia.
Well, good night.
Good night, Patricia, and
good night,
everyone.
Helene. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening. Tune in next week for another radio adventure with Supernatural Girl.